This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
On 96.9, yeah.
I'm telling you, with early detection
comes early prevention.
But lead in your pencil make you feel like a champion.
Rise up again.
Let nothing keep you down.
And live your best.
Heavy urologist.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Urology Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. And we have my co-host. Thank goodness he's here. He wasn't last week. Dr. Wesley Francis, who is a Bahamian general surgeon and surgical oncologist, and we are very pleased to have in the studio the very well-known and the very well-respected Bahamian Dr. Devon Curling, who is an internist, hematologist, and medical oncologist. Good evening to you, both of you gentlemen.
Good evening, Bahamas. Thanks, Greg, for being back here again. Welcome, Dr. Curling.
Good evening, Bahamas. Thank you guys for the invitation. Pleasure to be here.
So here we have the unique opportunity. We have the two foremost cancer experts, the medical and the surgical side in the Bahamas, and we can even say in the Caribbean, who are well-respected worldwide. So this show is all about cancer, and this show, every show is important, but this show can very well save your life or save the life of someone you love. So cancer is going to soon overtake heart disease as the number one killer in the world. And that's frightening. If you're born today, about 50% of women are going to face cancer in the lifetime, about 33% of men. Last year, over 9.6 million persons died of cancer. And we all know somebody who's being afflicted with cancer in our society. It's an overwhelming issue. We've had many discussions with Dr. Wesley Francis and myself in regards to how do we prevent cancer, modifiable risk factors, non-modifiable risk factors. So we're going to talk about everything cancer today, and please, we want this to be an interactive show. We want there to be call-ins. No question is foolish. I see we have a call-in already, but you can call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, 326-4259. So there's so many things, so many aspects in regards to cancer. We're going to obviously talk about the main ones. We're talking about colon cancer, breast cancer, pancreatic cancer, cervical cancer. We're always emphasizing on this show preventative medicine, being proactive. We are always pleading with the public to please let the preteens and teens and the young adults, male and female, get the HPV vaccine. We have a call coming in early in the show. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Very good. Afternoon, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Right up. Okay, yeah, I love this topic today, right? Based on the fact that cancer is a very nasty disease. Everyone in the Bahamas at some point in their lives has someone in their family or loved one die of this horrible disease. Texas and the United States of America now, right, are now doing a law banning certain foods because of chemicals in the food. Foods that we like Fruit Loops, Tostitos, and other foods, and even sodas, have found chemicals causing cancer and other life-threatening diseases. I think it's the foods we're eating that's affecting us, and we really, really need to do something better with our food security in the Bahamas, actually worldwide. A lot of these foods that we eat are contaminated and are affecting our bodies in very negative ways. We eat too much processed food and other things. We're not taking care of our bodies. How do you think about, or what do you think about the fact that all our processed foods and stuff we're consuming on a daily basis, all this grease, all this trans fat, and everything are leading to these diseases that we're having now and complications. What do you think about that?
Thank you for the call. I think you've made some brilliant points. And we can even look within our own archipelago of beautiful islands, and we look at Grand Bahama, New Providence versus our own family islands, and we look at the statistics in terms of cancer incidence. A lot of it has to do with lifestyle. A lot of it has to do with there's more obesity, obviously, in the main islands. But we also look at what they're eating. I mean, they're doing more farming. They're doing more fishing. There's a lot less processed foods. So yes, obviously diet has an important role. I've read many studies. I can remember a landmark study where they looked at wild dogs. They looked at the cancer incidence for packs of wild dogs in Australia. And they essentially never found cancer in any of the wild dogs. But when we look at what is the incidence of domesticated dogs and cancer in North America, it can be as high as 15%. So obviously, diet has an important role in terms of our cancer risk. But I'll let that question be further answered by the experts.
So I think one of the things that we are not taught about in medical school a lot is what we put into our bodies. And Carl, I think you really bring up a very, very good point. And the longer that you spend in medicine, the more important you realize how important the fuels are that you're putting into your body. Not only the preservatives and everything else causing a direct effect in terms of toxins, but we also have to look at the other things that it causes. So eating unhealthily promotes diabetes, promotes inflammation, promotes high blood pressure. All of these things, when you add them up, and the unhealthy lifestyle, that increases your risk of getting some type of cancer. So I definitely think that we need to focus more on what we put into our bodies. I tell people, even in this day and age, if you look at it, I was talking to a group of young doctors the other day, and the majority of them had no clue what a hog plum was, what a scarlet plum was, a gannep, a dilly. These are things that we used to run around and eat all the time. And God is pretty brilliant. He provides just about every nutrient that you need within the local produce that's there. So instead of focusing on eating apples, oranges, imagine how amazing it would be if you went into a hotel like Bahama and you met on the fruit plate, you met all of the local fruits. So, caller, you're definitely right on that. We do need to focus a lot more on what we're putting into our bodies. And the other big thing that Bahamians do is the sugar sweetened drinks, right? Water. The amount of people that I have to tell, Vitamalt is not a healthy thing. If we can get rid of the Gatorades, the iced teas, the Snapples, and so on, and focus on water, that also goes a long way because that's a huge sugar load that we're putting into our body. So your point is well taken.
And alcohol as well. So we as a country, we consume the volume of alcohol that we consume, just the average individual, is far too high. There's a strong link between alcohol and at least 6 different cancers that can increase quite considerably your cancer risk. Even looking at breast cancer, which is overwhelming our society, at least 15% of breast cancers in the United States were found to be linked directly to alcohol intake. So drink sparingly or not at all. And even that cancer rink is even with moderate alcohol intake. Obviously, we don't want to smoke. Bahamian men don't want to hear that, and particularly in regards to cigars. I'll let you speak on that, please, Dr. Curlin, because they give me hell. That, you know what, don't take away my cigars. What the hell is Dr. Pinto talking about? I mean, I'm overwhelmed in the last 2-3 years with bladder cancers. Every one of them smokes cigars, and they seem to be astonished to know there's a link between bladder cancer and cigar smoking.
And so most people think of cigar smoking as just cancers of the lung and the oral area. But yes, there's increased risk of bladder cancer also. And cigarettes, any type of thing that you're inhaling into your body, marijuana, I always hear, you know, well, marijuana is a natural herb, so please, doc, I'll keep smoking that and so on. But no, any tobacco product, marijuana, all of those things have bad effects and increase your risk. So the cigar, I know we all want to celebrate, you know, a new birth, a new this, but when you're talking about smoking a cigar every day and having one, not only is it increasing your cancer risk, but also your tooth decay. You're going to be getting lots of gum disease and other things like that, which also contribute to poor health. And interesting enough, we're learning a lot more about oral hygiene and health and how that affects the rest of the gut biome. And we're learning more about how gut health is so important in terms of risk. So what you're feeding that gut and the toxins that you're putting in terms of the saliva with the tobacco and so on, is really wreaking havoc. And we're actually learning that you'll be surprised to know how much your gut biome actually controls you as opposed to you controlling what you eat. So generally, we say it takes about 5 weeks to establish a habit. Unfortunately, it takes a lot longer to get rid of a bad habit, something like smoking. But we find that smoking is a lot more social also. So there are people that drink, and when they drink, they want to have a cigar or a cigarette. If they get around certain individuals, somebody lights up, they want to light up. So it's really a complete lifestyle change in terms of where you hang out and who you hang out with. But it's your life, and it's something that you got to take seriously.
So it's interesting, right? I mean, everything we've spoken about tonight so far is about choice and our choices. And we talk about cancer or causation is either modifiable risk factors and non-modifiable risk factors. And the non-modifiable, basically your gender, your age, your genetics. But the rest of this is all modifiable. And so it becomes the sum of your choices that determine your destiny. And that's what we've been preaching on this radio show for the last year, Greg. So smoking, alcohol, nutrition. And nutrition is important. Your diet is your medicine. And, you know, Dr. Curlin mentioned the gut biome. There's good bacteria in your GI system. And those are there to protect you. And if anything alter those, then that makes you more susceptible to disease. So really, all that we're talking about are choices that we can make that would influence our future. Because a lot of these things take time to develop. And it doesn't happen overnight. And so if that habit continues for long, you initially you get the benefits of the habit because it makes you probably feel good. I mean, people don't smoke because it's bad. Initially, they smoke because, you know, there's something that they get from it. But then it's the latent or the delayed ill effects of it that they're reaping. So you wise choices, and that's what we preach on the show. Wise choices. Proper nutrition, proper exercise, and these are the difficult decisions that you got to make now that are going to save your life later.
I mean, in furtherance to the topic of smoking, I wrote an article yesterday. I write an article every single week for 8 years on the Tuesday Health section, but in the NASA Guardian, I wrote about vaping. There's a lot of propaganda out there because of the capitalist society where vaping is a $1 billion business, and it's promoted as innocuous. We have teenagers, even younger, vaping and think that there are no ill health effects regarding that. There are dozens and dozens of carcinogens, even in many cases, more harmful than filtered cigarettes that you are putting yourself at risk by vaping. So vaping is as dangerous or even more dangerous than cigar smoking and cigarette smoking. So we need to take away that fallacy that vaping is a cool fad, that there is no increased cancer risk. We didn't even talk about the risk of smoking and cardiovascular disease. And that's a very profound, strong link. So you're going to give yourself a heart attack, you're going to give yourself a stroke, increase your risk of cancer. There's a secondhand smoke issue as well. You can't live your life selfish. I mean, we've spoken about it many times, that those carcinogens, the smoke permeates your skin, your hair follicles, and you go pick up your baby, you go and interact with your three-year-old. You don't know what DNA damage or mutations you might be creating by exposing your loved ones to all these carcinogens and these harmful products. So some individuals are, because of their genetics and the way they metabolize certain carcinogens, are at greater risk. Yeah, there are some 105-year-olds who smoke 2 packs a day. But when we talk about statistically speaking, certain individuals, even if they smoke 2 cigars or cigarettes a week, they're going to get bladder cancer, going to get lung cancer, going to get kidney cancer. So don't even take that risk, please. It's just absolutely not worth it. It's not worth it. And too many of these persons who come in with these cancers are coming in way too late. They're ignoring the symptoms, just as urologists, blood in the urine. Okay, I've seen blood in my urine. It goes away. It must be a urinary tract infection. That's the last thing you're going to think, particularly if you're middle-aged, particularly if your risk factors of smoking. You're going to think cancer until proven otherwise. It might be as benign as a kidney stone, or may, in those rare circumstances, be hemorrhagic cystitis, a very bad bladder infection. But you don't just brush it off as nothing. Always be overly diligent. Don't risk your life by just accepting the fact that something that you know is very alarming and can be very alarming, don't let fear let you ignore it. So cancer is a very diverse topic. Even when we've spoken about it many times, we have the breast cancer experts here. Even within breast cancer itself, it's a very complex disease. So one breast cancer is not the same as another. I mean, just in terms of the different types, there's non-invasive in situ. There's ductal carcinoma in situ, DCIS. There's lobular carcinoma in situ, LCIS. There's invasive breast cancers where you have invasive ductal carcinoma, invasive lobular carcinoma. You have inflammatory breast cancer. You have triple negative breast cancer. You have metastatic breast cancer. So even one person having breast cancer can have a very completely different disease than someone else who has breast cancer. You can even compare colon cancer and pancreatic cancer. Breast cancer varying between two different individuals can be as different as a disease in two different organs.
So one of the things that I'd like to emphasize, seeing that I have we have Curlin here today, you know, breast cancer treatment has evolved over the years. And as you mentioned, there are different subtypes of breast cancer. And basically, the management or the treatment of breast cancer is pretty personalized. So it's really personalized treatment based on the individual, based on the subtype, based on the stage. And one of the things, one of the types of breast cancer, which was very difficult to treat before, is triple negative breast cancer. And I'm sure that a lot of people may recognize that name. And this is a type of breast cancer that does not respond to hormones. But over the last few years, there's a different form of treatment that has shown itself to be very effective against triple negative breast cancer. And this is immunotherapy. And now that we have Curlin here today, it'll be great for Curlin to talk about the changes that we've seen in the treatment of triple negative breast cancer in terms of the outcome once or since the advent or the use of immunotherapy. And perhaps maybe tell us a little about immunotherapy and then how effective it has been in the treatment of triple negative breast cancer.
Okay, so I guess a good place to start with that is that, you know, patients come in all the time and the first thing they'll say is, well, Dr. Francis here will send me a patient and they'll ask me, well, how come he didn't cut my breast off? My friend got my breast off. Why is mine still on? Why are you talking about doing this other treatment first? And for many, many years, when I first started back in this many years ago, the standard of care was that everybody would go for surgery first. Then after their surgery, they'd come and they'd get their systemic therapy. What we found now is that, and especially for larger tumors, but for any triple negative tumor, if any HER2 positive tumor, if we give you your chemotherapy and immunotherapy and antibody therapy first, that we actually get a better outcome. Because what we're doing is we're shrinking that tumor down, and sometimes we even get what's called a complete response. That means that at the time of surgery, there's no disease there. And we know that people that get a complete response do better, but it also allows us to have a marker, because if there's not a complete response, we know that that cancer is more aggressive. So even after the surgery, we give some more chemotherapy in addition to the immunotherapy. So when the immunotherapy came out probably about 5-6 years ago now, maybe a bit longer. And what it is it's actually stimulating, the easiest way to think about it is it's stimulating your body's own immune system to fight the cancer that's in your body. If you want to think about what a cancer cell is and why it's so difficult to treat, all a cancer cell is a normal cell in your body that's lost all control. So think about if you have an identical twin, and that twin now takes out a gun and goes on a rampage. And the police, which is your immune system now, has no way to tell if that's your twin or you. The body's in a similar type of situation. And this is really breaking it down in a very simplistic manner. There's a lot of other things that go into it. But by stimulating your immune system actually helps to attack that cancer cell. So now, triple-negative tumors used to be very, very bad.
Yeah, very aggressive.
Very aggressive. They spread early. You could have a small tumor that's 2 centimeters, and that's already spread all over the place. But with the addition of immunotherapy now, we're getting a much higher incidence of what we call complete responses. So our survivals are significantly improving. Our response rates are improving. And now we have women that are doing a lot better. There's a similar story, and I'll just also veer into her too. So many, many years ago, we knew that there were a group of women that did poorly. And after a while, we found out that these women had a marker called HER2-new. For years, we knew that people with this marker did poorly, but then in about 2007, 2008, there was a drug called Herceptin that came along, and that was an antibody specifically targeted towards the HER2 marker. And similar to triple negative, we find that when we give HER2 therapy prior to surgery, that these patients also do a lot better. So I think the take-home message here is that breast cancer is such a heterogeneous disease. There's so many different forms and types that you are going to, your friend may have breast cancer that's treated with completely different drugs, completely different surgery. Someone may need radiation, someone may not need it. But we're excited now about all of the changes that are happening, because not only now is there HER2 drugs that are new ones coming out all the time, there's also the new immunotherapies that are coming out, but there's also new inventions in hormone therapy also. So we're attacking the cancers on multiple fronts. And if we take it one step further now, where we look at metastatic disease, and by metastatic disease or stage 4 disease, all we mean is you have a cancer that started in one organ that spread to someplace else. So if you have a colon cancer that went to the liver, that's stage 4. If you have a breast cancer that went to the lung, that's stage 4. But in metastatic disease now, we're even finding more mutations that we have. And with a simple blood test, we can actually check you for a whole myriad of specific things that we can target. So we're moving beyond the era of chemotherapy for everybody, and we're getting more and more targeted. And the advantage of targeted therapy is because you're doing a targeted agent, you're only focusing on the cancer cell, which means that the side effect profile is a lot less. People are living a lot longer, even with stage 4 disease. So this is exciting times right now in oncology. And, you know, there's new things that are being discovered all the time.
So that's, you know, girl, and I'm happy that you brought that up, because, you know, we put a lot of words out there. We say triple negative, we say HER2, and basically all of this is the different subtypes of breast cancer. Curlin used the word heterogeneous. So basically what that means is one size does not fit all. Breast cancer is not just one simple diagnosis that requires one simple set of treatment. And right now we have, you know, like 5 different subtypes. And of all of those, and I say this to patients as a surgeon, surgery is not the first option in hardly any of those, maybe only one, the hormone-positive ones, right? Everything else, surgery is not the first option anymore. And so, and I'm saying that as a surgeon, and I always encourage when I see patients, I say, listen, this is personalized medicine. This is where, you know, we communicate, and you don't have just one doctor when it comes to this. And so I'm encouraging people out there who are listening. Surgery is not always the first option. And I know in our society, we believe, boy, if you have this lump in the breast or you have breast cancer, just cut it off. No, that's not always the first approach. Because the treatment options have changed tremendously. And we've made significant milestones, you know, with the management and treatment of breast cancer and looking at different mutations, the same in colon cancer. And not all stage four are the same. And that's one thing to emphasize too, because sometimes people hear that they have stage four disease and they think that it's a death sentence. It's not. It really depends on the subtype. And sometimes it takes time to figure that out. And when you figure that out, then you have the appropriate treatment options for those patients. And that's a message that you have to really get across to people, you know?
Yeah. And you know, we tend
we
to focus...
A caller?
Oh, yeah, we have a call coming in. This is Urologist Speaks. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well.
One more time, right? Yeah, sorry, but I have two questions for you, right?
Yes.
One, cancer, follow me on this now, right? Cancer was around from 3000 BC. Doc, listen to me now. 3000 BC. You trying to tell me y'all cure everything in the world. Y'all came up with a cure for COVID in probably four or five months flat. But no one could cure cancer? This has to be by design.
Can I go with that?
Please.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
3000 BC, no one came up with a cure for cancer. This is one of the longest living diseases almost in human history. No one could cure it. We sent a man to the moon. They have people now going to occupy Mars. But we can't cure cancer. Second question, right? How come no doctors or hardly any doctors believe in herbal medications when it comes to cancer? Like soursop or other things that you could eat or take. I'm not saying to cure it, right, but to prevent it. How come no doctors really believe in herbal medication? I'll hang up for your two responses for those two questions, please.
Okay, so I'll take on the first question, which is in terms of curing cancers. Caller, so what I'm going to say is, yes, cancer has been around for thousands and thousands of years. But to say that we can't cure it is a bit of a myth. Most cancers are curable now. Our issue is, and just like with heart disease or high blood pressure, if we wait until it's too far gone, we cannot cure it. We just treat it and manage it. But most cancers in this day and age are curable. The problem is that we don't take care of ourselves and we don't do our screening test. The four most common cancers in the world, colon, breast, prostate, and cervical, all of those have screening tests where when we catch it early, you're cured.
Totally curable.
You're done. But we wait, if you come in and you have a cancer that's spread all over your body, chances are I'm not going to be able to cure it. The flip side of that is I can tell you that even in the short time that I've been practicing, there are several cancers where when I was in training, CML, for instance, which is a type of leukemia, people would die within 2 years. Now, I have patients who've been walking around with CML for 20-plus years, 25 years, because there's a lovely medication that came out that targets something specific to that. So the take-home message, once again, comes back to taking care of ourselves, monitoring our bodies, okay? We don't cure diabetes, quote-unquote, but if we were to take the right steps, eat properly, exercise, we'd never get it. So we're still coming back to the home point of prevention is your best cure. I don't know if you want to call
Well, I think the soursop question goes to Dr. Wesley Francis.
Yeah.
I, this is what I tell people, right? whenever I'm faced with a patient who asks my opinion on herbal therapies, I'm very honest with them because, I mean, I'm not trained in herbal therapy. I'm trained conventionally. But I just tell them and give them my experience. I mean, I've had many patients who have decided to abandon conventional therapy and go on to have herbal therapy. And in my experience, and I'm speaking for myself, none of them do very well. And I follow them. I continue to keep a relationship with them so that I can know how they do. And then I can share that experience with other people. In my experience, I have not seen anybody who would have gone and abandoned their conventional therapy and adopted herbal therapy to live or do well, had a good outcome. I've just never seen it. And that's just my opinion on that. Can it happen? Maybe. But in my opinion, I've never seen it. In terms of prevention, I think that there's a lot of things that we can do out there to prevent. And we know all the modifiable risk factors, we can do that to change, to help us to prevent from getting cancer. But once you've got it, okay, there are conventional therapies for it, especially if it's caught early. We, as Dr. Curlin said, we can cure it. But there's conventional proven therapy, and a lot of these therapies come through clinical trials. They're tested and proven. I'm not a herbalist. I can't offer herbal medicine treatment, but I can tell you what I've seen is that people don't do well if they abandon their conventional therapy.
And we were talking about cure. Mm. Let's just talk about facts. We have essentially a cure for cervical cancer. We have the HPV vaccine. It's readily available in this country and throughout the world. It's readily available for free in this country. If every male and female got the HPV vaccine, we wouldn't have any cervical cancer in the next generation. None. But what percentage of Bahamians have the HPV vaccine? What percentage of parents take their preteens or teens, male and female, to get the HPV vaccine? And we have spoken many times of the horrors of stage 3 and stage 4 cervical cancer hitting many women in their prime with children and a wife and a career to live for, dying a horrible, terrible disease for many, many years. And you see, you have a 5-year-old daughter, you have a 8-year-old son seeing their mother die before their eyes when all they had to do have gotten the HPV vaccine, which has been around since 2009. So we also have to take our own responsibility. I mean, one of the top cancers around is cervical cancer. We can cure our next generation from getting HPV-related cervical cancer by 92-95%. Essentially, eradicate cervical cancer, but we're not doing enough, although the cure is right there.
And so, it's simple, and it's cheap, right? Yes. Prevention is way better than cure.
The number one STI in the world is HPV.
Yeah.
We can eradicate that. I don't understand what the reservation is. So when we talk about immunotherapy, I've seen personally immunotherapy in like 10 years do miracles, things where persons had, I'll go back to bladder cancer, had liver mets, had lung mets. These things have melted away, and these people are basically almost looking like they're disease-free, and it's usually very well tolerated. Compared to chemotherapy, a lot of these patients get chemo and immunotherapy, and they'll describe the side effects and the long-term side effect profile chemotherapy. They might have some peripheral neuropathy going on 10 years later, but immunotherapy is very well tolerated and does wonderful things. Even in bladder cancer, the most common form of bladder cancer is urothelial carcinoma. We always, before we even do any surgery, first thing is neoadjuvant chemotherapy plus immunotherapy. And many times, once we do any surgery, there is no more cancer on a macroscopic level. So surgery is not the stay first line for many cancers. And it's always revolving. We're learning more and more in terms of there's liquid biopsies. I don't know if either of you want to talk about liquid biopsies and the future of that. But there are many things that are doing. We're doing genetic testing. We have a lot of family clusters of certain cancers. A lot of genetic testing can provide some insight in terms of your risk profile. But we'll talk about this with Dr. Curling and Dr. Francis and more on the other end of the break. This is Urology Speaks.
Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel want to take you and three others on a seven-day cruise to Panama, Colombia, Curacao, and Aruba on Royal Caribbean Serenade of the Seas. And here's the best part, no visa required. That's right, no visa required. You have four ways to enter, four ways to win. One, fill out the form in the Nassau Guardian. Two, listen to Star 106.5 and Guardian Radio 96.9. Three, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Four, or make a purchase at Going Places Travel. Entry deadline is June 27, 2025. So pack your bags, get ready to soak up the sun and feel that ocean breeze. You and three loved ones sailing the high seas on a vacation cruise of a lifetime. Drawing is on July 4, 2025. Brought to you by the Nassau Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel. Certain conditions apply. Airfare, taxes, and gratuities not included.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Dr. Gregory Pinto, Dr. Wesley Francis, and we have the esteemed Dr. Devon Curling, who is an internist, hematologist, and oncologist, medical cancer expert. So we're talking about everything cancer. We have the surgical oncologist. We have the medical oncologist. I can talk about everything and related to
urologist and urologist.
Urology. Exactly. So, we're talking about kidney cancer, bladder cancer, prostate cancer. So no one needs to be dying of prostate cancer. That's the first thing from my specialty. Prostate cancer is one of the very few cancers that you can say the five-year survival is about 99%. 10-year survival for organ-confined early disease is like 97%. All of us are going to have prostate cancer if we live too long enough. If you look at every 80-something-year-old black man, every one of them has prostate cancer, but the vast majority of them are going to die with prostate cancer, not from prostate cancer. So we have to understand the disease itself. We have to understand the genetics behind it. We have to understand our environment, our society. We're talking a little bit about the clusters and with families. We're talking about genetics. Obviously, we always talk about BRCA gene. BRCA gene mutation is not just a gene. It's actually mutation, type 1, type 2. Can increase the risk of innumerable cancer. We're not just talking about breast cancer. We also need to remind our audience that men can get breast cancer as well.
Yes.
We're talking about increasing risk of numerous skin cancers, pancreatic cancers. It can exponentially increase the risk of getting prostate cancer as well. So does genetics really have a very prominent role in the number of cancers that we see in our society, or is it more environmental, or would you say 50-50?
Oh, boy. So for us, we definitely have a very strong genetic component. But we also have a really strong environmental component just because of diet and other things like that. But when we speak specifically to genes, so as you know, there was a study that we did here that showed that we had one of the highest rates of BRCA1 mutations that had ever been seen. And the BRCA1 gene increases your risk of not only breast but also ovarian cancer. Those are the two principal ones. But it also increases the risk of colon cancer, prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer, and so on. Back in, I think, 2004, 2005, we noticed that we have a very high incidence of breast cancers in very young women. So in the U.S., the average age is about 61. In our population, the average age is about 50 to 51. And a large percentage of our patients are below the age of 50. So when I moved home, for instance, I rarely saw women with breast cancer in their 20s and 30s. When I came home from the U.S., and while I was training in the U.S., I saw a lot more patients, but I did not see patients in their 20s and 30s. I come home and I just see a ton of young women with cancer. And as a result of that, figured that there must be some type of gene going on. So the study was done and it showed that we have a rate of up to 24% of women with a BRCA gamma mutation. So the genetic component is definitely there, but even when you take out BRCA1, and we have a ton of women and families that are BRCA negative, but a whole slew of family members have various types of cancer. So we know that there are some other genes floating around in our population that we have not discovered yet. You mentioned liquid biopsies and other things like that. So now we're in the age of something called NGS, which is the next generation sequencing. And that's where we look at minute clusters of mutations that may lead towards a certain cancer. And it's based on an AI model. So the AI model, if we test you for 1,000 different genes, we may find that you have these four genes. They might not seem like they mean anything right now. But as the AI gets more and more, but with that cluster of four genes, they have something. So there was a gentleman that we tested 9 years ago. He had some rare mutations, didn't know what they were. And we just got a letter back like a few months back saying, oh, we finally identified this cluster that he had is a risk factor for this. So we know that we have bad genetics in the Bahamas. And, you know, people always like to say, why and so on. Well, you know, there's certain realities that we have to face.
What is the answer? Is it radical to say we need to increase the gene pool? Do we need outside? And
this is what I'm saying. We have to understand.
Don't fall for this with Bento, okay? He always tries to get us in trouble.
I know where he's going.
It's a reality. It's a reality.
We ain't going there. I've been on the show with him plenty of times. He's trying to drag us down that road. We don't need to go down that road. Okay?
I would say that we do have a small gene pool and widening it would help, right? So, yep.
Thank you.
We'll just leave that there for right now.
Simple solutions to complex issues.
Yeah. We're learning more and more. The good news is that testing for these gene clusters is becoming cheaper and cheaper. When I was in training, it took about a year to run the human genome. Now it takes about 2-3 days almost. So things are changing very rapidly in that sense.
And it's not just for cancer. I mean, it can tell you what is your risk of getting Alzheimer's in your lifetime and other things. So it's very important and it's groundbreaking. So, I mean, it's going to change the whole future of medicine itself in terms of screening, in terms of treatment, in terms of profiling individuals in risk, and maybe even at one point you'll say, all right, part of the workup for getting married, you have to look at the genes and what is the risk. Should two persons really get married if they want to have children? Or maybe they should get married, but you know what? They should, in fact, adopt instead of having their own.
Right. So we do it kind of now with sickle cell disease, right? So we counsel people. That's a form of genetic counseling. The flip side of that, or the issue with it is, and I always have this chat with patients before we do any type of genetic testing, is that realizing that if you test positive for something, that is now a brand. And by that I mean anytime you apply for any type of insurance, if you go for a mortgage and they want life insurance and you're positive, you may get denied or they may say everything except this. So we don't have laws in place yet to protect people with genetic diseases. And that's something that really needs to be addressed. It's something that we've been talking about for years now, especially in a population like ours that has this high rate of these things. So we need to put some legislation in place to protect people so that we can actually tell people safely, go get tested, because now if you test positive, we know that we need to do this, this, and this to treat you, and we need to monitor this, this, and this. But if I'm a 25-year-old person who's just graduating school and I'm getting ready to go out there, I might not want to know that because it could affect my mortgage. It could affect my ability to get life insurance.
So in the U.S., they have this Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. And I think that's something, and that's precisely there to protect,
yep.
You know, patients. Because, again, it's something you're born with, right? I mean, should you be discriminated because you were born with this, right? And so, like I said, in the U.S., they have this law that protects. And I think here in the Bahamas, this is something that we need to start lobbying for to adopt. We do have a high rate of BRCA in the population. And if that information, you know, is in the wrong hands and that is used to discriminate against certain people, for example, against insurance and stuff like that, and not everybody with a BRCA gene will actually get breast cancer or colon cancer or prostate. Yes, your risk increases, but not necessarily you'll get it. So this is something that we really need to start looking into. And, I mean, advocacy groups like Cancer Society, all the other groups out there probably needs to now start advocating and lobbying the government to let's look at protecting people with genetic predispositions.
I mean, there's some studies that are very controversial. They're even looking at some genes that can predispose us to being more violent than another individual. I mean, that labeling can be very dangerous. You can pigeonhole someone and say, you know what, you're prone to be violent, and then that manifests itself. I mean, you could even look at things like bipolar disease, looking at schizophrenia. That's something that if you put that label out there and you say you're right, are you going to get hired by a company? Are you going to have the same life as someone else who isn't, have that whatever 15% chance of being schizophrenic in their lifetime? So it's a lot of dangers and knowing too much, but in terms of cancer, it can be life-saving, particularly for certain families that have a very particularly high risk of being getting certain cancers. But it's unfortunate. We have a small population. We have a small gene pool, and because of the genetics, things don't seem to be getting better. Dr. Wesley Francis was joking with me, but it is. We also need to look at increasing our gene pool. I'm not advocating that. But,
you are advocating that.
I'm just saying that I don't want to see the next generation have as much in terms of this small gene pool with the BRCA gene.
I mean, I agree. We percentages joke about it.
Percentages getting higher and higher, and that's the way it's going to go. The trend is, if we look at what was the percentage of BRCA gene mutations, type 1 and 2, in 1960s Bahamas versus 2025, it's exponentially higher. It's exponentially higher, and we don't want that trend to be worse when we're looking at 2050 Bahamas compared to 2025 now. So it's a lot to think about.
It is a lot to think about. And, you know, the balance of the show, you know, this is Men's Health Month.
Yes.
And
we have the internist here. We have the experts.
You know, he's a, you know,
we've spoken.
He's an oncologist, hematologist, but... You know, you did internal medicine too, did you not?
Many years ago, yes. But
so your wife is a better internist than you are. By far, right?
I would definitely agree with that.
We had
statement.
His wife on the show two weeks ago, and I mean, it was a wonderful show, and she wrote a nice book. Did you help her write the book?
I was there for the support. So, okay.
were you a case study?
It was part of her journey. It was part of her journey.
Yeah, so we have a country overwhelmed, we always talk about it, with non-communicable diseases, and men are afflicted at a higher rate and a greater severity than our women, because men just don't take care of their health. So Part of this radio show this month, June, will be centered on men's health awareness. Let's try to... A lot of men feel that they're suffering in silence, and all the fanfare and media and money put in by the even the Ministry of Health is put into women in terms of breast cancer, etc. And we're not doing enough for, let's talk about pancreatic cancer affecting men. We're talking about prostate cancer.
The group is called Us Too.
Yeah. Very much
so. Because they forget us.
Yes.
Well, I think, I mean, this stems to a societal problem, right? In that Dr. Vraj just said, they forget us. And I think a more important aspect of that is that men don't want to be known. We men tend to want to keep all of their health stuff very secretive because society says you're supposed to be strong, you're not supposed to show your weakness and so on, right? But getting back to prevention at the heart of all this, and yes, we eat unhealthily, but one of the huge things is that we are just an immobile, lazy society. We do not exercise, and especially the men. If you have ever, which I'm sure you guys have because y'all are the surgeons, when you get called into the hospital at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and you see the walking groups, you see groups of 30 women walking. You don't see that with men. We don't take care of our general health.
We see that because surgeons have to come out at all hours. Yes. And you're sleeping.
Yes. I'm just letting you know, but it's the women that are walking, right?
You're sleeping, correct?
You're sleeping, yeah.
And so I think we really need to focus on getting healthy lifestyles and incorporating movement into our daily lives. And, I mean, we're actually probably the worst. When we look at physicians... You're in your office, you're in the operating room. Yeah. When do you have time to actually exercise? And so my shock moment, I guess, was when I was teasing a patient. And I was like, look at you, man. I said, look at all this weight you put on. You can't even touch your toes. And he's like, doc, well, let me see you do it. And I went to touch my toes, and I said, ow, right? So at that point, I said, you know what? It's time to start exercising. And there are simple things that you can do. If you are a lawyer, if you are a doctor, if you are a anything, in between clients, you can drop and do 10 squats. You can do 10 push-ups, little things throughout the day. You can stand up and do your notes. You can walk. You can take the steps. But we really need to start focusing on exercising. That's going to decrease our cardiovascular disease. That's going to decrease our diabetic our complications and so on. And one of the things that I counsel all of my patients on now is the importance of movement. The human body is made to move. Yeah, and we definitely. Literally sit down all day and type at that computer. So we got to get up and get outside, smell the fresh air, do some walking, do some exercising.
Okay, so we're talking about cancer and we're talking about June, which is men's and boys' health awareness month. So we talk about obviously the physical. We also have to talk about men in our society. We're losing a generation, and it's getting worse and worse. Crime is out of control. Murder has become a common circumstance that we have to face every day. We listen to the radio, we turn on the television, we read the newspaper. 3 more killings, 2 more drive-by shootings, attempted murder, rape, etc., etc. There's too much in terms of lawlessness in our society. There's a generation of young men who have no importance or emphasis on academics or academics in terms of success in the primary schools, in the University of the Bahamas, universities abroad, high schools. It's predominantly occupied, the top tiers are occupied by young girls, by women. So I applaud the women for that, but how, you're a very learned individual, you're a husband, you're a father, an important member of the community. What are the answers? And Dr. Francis and I have discussed, how are we going to save this generation of young men, health-wise, in terms of creating a future for them? Many of them feel that there is no future. They have no purpose. They have no identity. They have poor self-esteem. They have anger issues. You talk about men not wanting to go and see a doctor for physical ailments, but no boy wants to talk about the inner turmoil or emotional pain that they are facing until one day when they're 18 or 20, someone says the wrong thing, they pick up a bottle or a knife or a gun, and their life is gone forever. How do we save our nation?
I mean, I think you're getting into a really deep issue of society. And one of the biggest issues that we're facing right now, I guess, is the challenge of education. I mean, the bottom line is the way that you change this is that you change it with education. That's the bright spot, and encouraging young men to focus on their education. We're dealing with a societal issue of broken homes, children growing up raising children. So it's a much deeper issue in terms of where do we start? Do we start with the teenage mother who's, I met a 25-year-old grandmother the other day, okay? So do we start with the 13-year-old teen who's pregnant, who's now going to raise that boy and doesn't have the skill set to do so properly? Nor does her 28-year-old mother that raised her. How we attack those things and how we begin to do it is someone has to take the bold step, and someone's got to actually say that it's an issue. And, you know, ideally, we would love to have a society where we have two-parent homes and so on. Children with growing up in a two-parent home usually have a bit more balance, okay? But there are single mothers out there. But why is it always mostly the majority of this is single mothers, not single fathers? And so the 13-year-old girl is left with a child. The 18-year-old boy can disappear, take no responsibility. Boys, in particular, need that example structure of a strong male. So what studies have shown is that boys that turn to crime usually lack a strong male father figure. It doesn't have to be a father. It can be a big brother, it can be an uncle, it can be a neighborhood guardian. And we really have to start identifying young boys in school early that may be facing some issue and provide some of that guidance for them. Start providing programs where we cut these things off as soon as we see them. But unfortunately, like everything else, we're understaffed, we're underfunded.
I mean, I'll give an example. I mean, the mentality has to change. Obviously, for young boys, young men, teenagers, male teenagers, that essentially, I'll give an example. One of my patients received a scholarship to an Ivy League school, did very well, always did very well. And then I was talking to him about his success, and he said, "Do you know what the living hell I've had in terms of my peers pressuring me not to study, not to do well, looked down, frowned upon, young women not interested in me because I was a quote-unquote the nerd." And this young man has the brightest of futures. I mean, where are we going to change that mentality of picking up a book, actually doing the homework, actually studying, actually having some kind of perseverance and dedication to a future and to your education? Your education is your future, should be revered, not frowned upon. You shouldn't be called soft. You shouldn't be called a loser. Shouldn't be called a nerd. And that's the whole mentality of our society, from private school to public school, where young men do not want to succeed. And that is the most ridiculous thing on earth. They're losing their future because of peer pressure. And most of these people who are pressuring you are not your true friends and are not going to be your friends in the future. And if you are just to find a few friends, you don't have to live in life. You don't have to have a million friends. Have a few close friends that are like-minded, are positive-minded, who are going to uplift you, are not going to be jealous, want to see you succeed just as you want them to succeed. They can be your study partner. They can be your true friends, not through just elementary school, high school, but throughout life. And you guys can lean on each other and have a shared vision for the future, which will improve our society as a whole. We will do so much better as a society. Women have that all the time. That's the norm for most women. But for men, it's the opposite. If they're in detention, they're looked at as the cool kids. If they don't do their homework, they're looked at as the cool kids. If they don't go off to college, they never had any foresight to say, you know what, that's the next step to giving a better life for myself, better life for my parents, better life for my offspring. They only see living for today and living for tomorrow.
You know, we speak on this topic a lot. I mean, all through the airwaves, during the day, a lot of talk shows. We always come down to one point, that education is the game changer, right? Education is important in health. Education is important in economics. Education is important in getting people out of poverty. And the focus should really be on education. Where do you start? Early childhood education. But, you know, we still struggle with this as a society. Are we putting enough resources into education? Are we taking it that serious enough? Knowing that it is the common denominator, all right, to some of the ills and the woes in our country. If you educate people, and if you start early, then you can make a change. But it's not an overnight change, right? It's going to take generations to change that. But at some point, we have to start. And where perhaps maybe the education minister is the most important minister in the country, right? Where the education minister is maybe the prime minister. Because prime is the number one, the chief. Because I think it's going to take that focus on education to get us out of the rut we are in today. I think we need to emphasize that more and more.
And the path is easier and easier as time goes on. We look at NHI and how it's helped in terms of primary care. Everything is free. All the medications for all these non-communicable diseases are free. Your imaging once a year is free. Your annual physicals are free. You can see a quote-unquote private physician as a private patient paid for by the government. The same thing is for education. There are scholarships available. Even if you look at scholarships for private schools. You're looking at University of Bahamas. If you have a certain GPA and maintain that GPA, you can have an excellent first degree, and then you can go off and and go and get your second degree, et cetera. So the economics are not going to hold you back. All you got to do is have the drive, have the determination, have the perseverance. It's easier in life to work hard now and make those sacrifices and live the better life tomorrow and years to come. Any last thoughts, Dr. Curling? First of all, thank you for having you. You were a wonderful guest, not as good as your wife. And we'll both take the $100 you promised for us to say that. Your wife is a lot more intelligent than you are.
You married a woman smarter than you. That's exactly what they say. Yeah, but
good night, Bob.
Good night.
Thank you. Thank you.
Live better. Live better. Live stronger.
Live stronger. With the help of Doc, man, we live in life.